Thanks very much. Thank you so much for coming. I almost didn't make it here this morning. My oldest kid lives here in Boston and moved here, I guess, a few months ago. And so we went out to visit her last night. She's living out in Medford, out by Tufts University in a group house. And around 11 o'clock, we were playing a game called Apples to Apples. Does everybody know how to play Apples to Apples? Okay, well, let me show you. Do we have time? I'll take it out of my presentation. Basically, there are red cards and then the green. There's a green card. The green card, you turn over. It's usually an adjective like boring or irritable or bothersome. And then everybody gets, and that person is the judge. Everybody else then tries to look at their seven cards and find something on their cards, and their cards could be a name like Michael Jackson, it could be the San Andreas Fault, it could be liquor. You then submit it what you think the person who's the judge is going to pick as the closest, best match. And so you're trying to read the mind of the person who's the judge. And if the judge picks yours, you win. So around 11 o'clock, somebody turned over a card and said, too early. And I went, shoot, I forgot I'm presenting at 8:30 tomorrow morning. I've got to leave. I got to get out of here right now. So anyway, I'm going to talk about systems of care for kids with special health care needs from the latest National Survey of Children's Health. Maternal and Child Health Bureau, back at the turn of this most recent century, established the 6 core outcomes to create effective family-centered integrated systems of services and supports for kids and youth with special health care needs and their families. It was actually a little before 2000 because the performance measures for the Maternal and Child Health Bureau actually began, I believe, around 1995, 1996, and there was no data for kids with special health care needs. And one way to start that was to force states to try to collect it, to act as a catalyst for that. So the Maternal Child Health Bureau added various measures as performance measures. And so from that, starting in 2001, was the first national survey of children with special health care needs. And there were two other surveys after that in 2005, 2006, 2009, 2010. In the intervening years, we began the National Survey of Children's Health. And in those surveys, you could also collect data on kids with special health care needs, and in fact, you could compare them to kids without special needs, and that's what I'm going to do. This survey was released about 6 months ago. Now, the purpose of the NSCH is to produce national and state-based estimates on the health and well-being of kids, their families, and their communities. In many ways, when these surveys started, they were unique. They were unique in a couple ways. One is most surveys from the government, most national surveys for the government, can provide you with national estimates, but not state estimates. So these surveys were designed to be both nationally and state representative, so states could respond to performance measures. I mean, it was shocking to me, and Gloria talked about how relatively we're data rich, yet at the turn of the century, states could not give information on what their populations of children looked like. What were the major health conditions? What were the major barriers? And another feature that was unique of this survey was we didn't just want to look at the health of children, because as a precursor towards the movement of life course, we wanted to see how we wanted to look at the lives of children and not just their health. So we asked questions about family interactions. We asked questions about neighborhood conditions. And for those of you who are curious, I'll get into this in a second, actually. So we use the National Survey of Children's Health for the Title V needs assessment, as I mentioned, for planning and program development at the state level. For this latest one, you can compare changes from since 2003 and 2007, where the questions were identical. And hundreds and hundreds of articles have been published from these national surveys. This survey was done through independent random digit dialing with landlines and cell phones. It began when the surveys began in 2001, they were landline only. However, the percent of households who are without landlines or cell phone only at this point has increased so rapidly that first we included cell phones, because otherwise households with just landlines wouldn't be representative of the population of kids in the U.S., but that became prohibitively expensive. So for your information, we are now changing the survey from a random digit dial survey to an address-based sample. And what that's going to mean is it's going to be out of the field for a couple years as we have to change the mode of data collection. And we're probably going to start collecting smaller samples every year rather than doing once every 4 years, because eventually states will have enough sample to then have rolling averages every year. So for this survey, we screen households for kids under 18 years of age. And if there's more than one kid under 18 years of age, one was randomly selected to be the target of the interview. The interview lasted 33 minutes. The respondent was usually the parent or guardian. It was conducted in various languages, and money was offered when households with children had completed the interview, and 20% of interviews were completed after offering an incentive. As I mentioned, we try to look at the various influences on the life of the child. Now, there are a number of sections to the questionnaire. I'm only going to show you a couple because that's what I'm going to focus on for this presentation. One is health and functional status, and this we gathered information on the child's general health status, adolescence, height and weight, the kids with special health care needs screener, the prevalence of selected health conditions, the severity of conditions, and the risk of developmental delay. And then we asked a number of questions about their health insurance coverage and health care utilization, such as current or past year coverage, the type of coverage, whether there is a period without health insurance or they're uninsured, and we looked at the utilization of various kinds of services, as well as developmental screening. Please let me know if I'm going too fast. I am going too fast? Okay, please let me know if I'm going too slow. I just want you to know that before the word "the card too early" came up, the card "boring" came up. And I want you to know that didn't trigger that I need to leave for the presentation. Okay, so. And then we asked about medical home. And Andrea talked about this. I'm going to go into a little more detail about this. Medical home is an algorithm. It's taken from the article by McPherson et al. That was in the American Pediatrics and is promulgated by the American Academy of Pediatrics. Consists of usual place of care, personal doctor or nurse, receipt of family-centered care, satisfaction with provider communication, problems with referrals if needed, and unmet need for care coordination if needed. So let me get into this. Looking at all the children in the survey, you see that most parents report that their kids are in very good or excellent health, about 84%. Less for children's oral health, I believe that's around 70%. Now, when you look at kids with special health care needs, as you would expect, I combine excellent and very good here, And only about 68% of parents said their kids were in very good or excellent health. Remember, this is parent reported. So the most prevalent chronic condition we found was asthma. Almost 9% of parents reported that their children had asthma. And around 8%, I should have told a shorter story. Around 8% of parents said their kids had attention deficit disorder. Here we see that about 1.8% of parents reported that their kids had autism spectrum disorder. And this was reported in a paper by Blumberg et al. In a CDC report. When we look at type of health insurance coverage, the point I want to make here is that comparing kids with special health care needs to those without special health care needs, a lot more kids with special health care needs are receiving their insurance publicly. Almost half at this point, 43.4%. You see that kids with special health care needs are slightly less likely to be uninsured or have a period without insurance. Now, comparing 2003 to 2011-12, you see that there's been a major shift in how we insure kids with special health care needs. In 2003, only about 1 in 3 kids with special health care needs were receiving public insurance. By 2011-2012, it was up to 43%, as I mentioned, an increase of almost over 33%. There's wide variation in health insurance coverage for special health care needs. In some states, almost all kids are covered. In other states, mostly Western states, there's a fairly high percent of kids whose parents report they have no coverage. Next, looking at adequacy, about 77.9% of all kids were reported that their parents report that their insurance was adequate, meaning benefits, seeing the providers they need, and out-of-pocket costs are reasonable. Whereas for kids with special health care needs, it was only 70.8%. So a significant difference, as you would expect. And most of that difference, again, as you expect, is on out-of-pocket costs are reasonable. Kids with special health care needs were more likely to, if their parent reported that the child had an emotional developmental or behavioral problem, kids with special health care needs were more likely to receive mental health services, about 62% of those versus only half. However, in both cases, that's a pretty small percent of kids who have an emotional developmental behavior problem who are receiving mental health services. Now, lastly, we looked at kids with a medical home. Now, Andrea mentioned, should you look at this, got it. Okay. Andrea mentioned that there's a debate whether to look at medical homes separately for kids with special health care needs. According to his data, the answer is yes. They were significantly less likely to be classified as having a medical home, 47% versus 56%, quite a big difference. And when you look at the state level differences, they're huge differences, almost twice as much, 61% in Wisconsin for the highest, compared to 34% in D.C. for the lowest. And when you look at the components of medical home, you see that kids with special health care needs versus those without are very close in terms of getting into care, personal doctor, a usual source of care. Where you see the big difference, where you see the breakdown system, is when you get to care coordination. A huge difference. If a child needed care coordination, of course, that's affected by severity of condition, but that's where the big difference lies. So in summary, there's been a dramatic shift towards public health insurance coverage for kids with special health care needs. Adequacy is significantly lower with kids with special health care needs. They're less likely to have a medical home with big state variations. And that big difference is due to care coordination. I'd like to acknowledge Jessica Jones on our staff, and thank you very much.